Here are two new ways that you can promote Issues Etc. The Issues Etc. business card and the Issues Etc. bulletin board flyer. Simply go to the support page at issuesetc.org, click Issues Etc. business cards, print the page on suitable stock paper, and cut along the lines. We also have an 8.5 by 11 inch flyer for the bulletin board at your church. Issuesetc.org, go to the support page, click Issues Etc. bulletin board flyer, and print.
The Quran says that the food of the Muslim is lawful for the Jews and the Christians, and that the food of the Christians and the Jews are lawful to Muslims. This way, we can all sit at the same table to break bread from the same God who has provided for all of us.
That's Imam Johari Abdul Malik. He is the imam of a rather large mosque in the Washington, D.C. area, talking about Ramadan iftar, the breaking of the fast, while the fast takes place during the daylight hours for the month of Ramadan, observed by devout Muslims all over the world. What's the difference, though, between the way Christians fast and feast and the way Muslims fast and feast? Greetings and welcome to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in live this Monday afternoon, the 29th of August. After we talk with Ken Samples for a few minutes about Ramadan iftar, Dr. Peter Scare will join us from Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne, Indiana. Today, the church is remembering and observing the martyrdom of John the Baptist. Ken Samples is a regular guest. He's senior research scholar at Reasons to Believe, based in Pasadena, California, author of the books A World of Difference, Putting Christian Truth Claims to the Worldview Test, and Without a Doubt, Answering the 20 Toughest Faith Questions. Ken, welcome back to Issues Etc.
Hi, Todd. Good to be with you.
Is there a difference between Christian fasts and feasts and the Muslim fasts and feasts of Ramadan?
Yeah, that's a good question. And the thing that I think of immediately, Todd, is that when you look at these three Middle Eastern monotheistic religions of Judaism, Christianity, and Islam, they have certain things that they share in common with one or other of the religions. And I think with regard to your question, that Islam and Judaism are more alike than Judaism and Christianity are. And what I mean by that is, I think in many respects, Judaism and Islam see themselves as religions of practice. And so the idea there is that Islam would emphasize in many ways deeds over ideas or law over theology. And therefore, when they approach the fasting of Ramadan, in many respects, it is very different than the doctrinal ideas or theological ideas that are so very important within the Christian faith. And so I think that's an overarching element. It's not that there aren't theological ideas that are critically important in Islam, but really, when you meet a Jew, do you keep kosher? When you meet a Muslim, do you keep the five pillars? I don't think there's anything in Christianity that is that central in terms of practice as is the pillars for the Muslims.
So in the case of Islam and the Ramadan observations, whether it is the fast or breaking the fast, it is the discipline, if you will, to use the word loosely, the discipline of these things that is at the essence of the religion rather than faith.
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to push that point too far, but I think that there is a real element of truth in it that Islam really is a religion of practice. And again, that's not to say that they don't have very distinct views of the Quran, very distinct views of Allah, of angels, and a variety of other things. But if you were to look at the Apostles' Creed or the Nicene Creed within Christianity, there isn't really much like that within the religion of Islam. And so Christianity is a much more theologically oriented religion. And again, that of course, doesn't mean that Christians don't have some very serious moral principles that they take seriously, meeting in for the Lord's Supper, communing in church, and things like that. But yeah, I think that we see Islam emphasizing law, Sharia law, over theological principles.
So what is Ramadan iftar?
Yeah, very good. Ramadan is the ninth month of the Islamic calendar, and it shifts around a little bit, so it's not always at the same time. But typically it seems to fall late summer, early fall. All healthy Muslims are expected to fast during the daylight hours, so from sunrise to sunset. You don't eat any food, you don't drink at all, you don't smoke, you do not have sexual intercourse with your spouse. And this is said to commemorate something that is right at the heart of Islam. It commemorates what is called the Night of Power, which is a reference to Muhammad, or the Islamic belief that Muhammad received this revelation from Allah via the angel Gabriel that ultimately became the Quran. So this is, it promotes a time of spiritual reflection and physical discipline. I mean, if you go to some of the Middle Eastern countries, not eating or drinking during the daylight hours in the late summer, early fall can be very, very difficult. And so they also include a time of reading the Quran, so you read just enough each day to finish the entire book by the end of Ramadan.
Now, the way that it's been portrayed, and especially in the little actuality we heard at the opening of the program, is kind of a way of bringing the whole community together. This large mosque outside of Washington, D.C., the imam there, Johari Abdul Malik, said they were already feeding 800 to 1,000 people a night, mostly Muslims, during Ramadan iftar. Why not invite the entire community? And he says at the end, we heard him say this, I want your reaction, that this is a way that we, Christians, Jews, and Muslims, can all sit down at the same table and break bread from the same God who has provided for all of us. Strictly speaking, does the Quran accept the Christians' view of God?
Well, absolutely not. I mean, when he talks about the iftar, which of course would be the meal that would then break the fast during the evening, after the fasting during the day, I listened very attentively to that comment. And the Quran, Islamic theology, is very clear that theological ideas such as the Trinity, that God is one in essence but three in personhood, and the doctrine of the incarnation, that Jesus is a single person with both a divine and human nature, those are some of the worst heretical ideas that anyone could postulate. And so to affirm that Christians, Jews, and Muslims all believe in the same God, I think is very misleading.
Is that perhaps the product of a liberalized or a westernized practice of Islam, as opposed to the kind of Islam we would find, say, being taught in the mosques of Islamic nations, or, for that matter, in the Quran itself?
Yes, there is diversity in Islam, and sometimes it's hard to get Americans to kind of see that. I mean, you have very radical Muslims. You have people who are kind of in the middle, what we might call more traditional or orthodox Islam, but you also have people who are a bit more liberal, and I don't mean that politically, I mean it theologically. I mean, you have countries in various places, and I think in America, you have certain Islamic leaders who would be, you know, a bit more inclusivistic. But I was a bit surprised even still. That's a strong comment. I think when most Muslims say that we all worship the same God, what they mean is that you find the real God in the Quran, but when it comes to the Christian Bible and the Jewish Bible, those have been corrupted by Jews and Christians.
If you were invited by a Muslim to celebrate Ramadan iftar, to break the fast with him during one of the evenings of the month of Ramadan, if you were to accept, what would you want him to know about your presence there?
Well, that's a very provocative question. I think that since Islam is a religion of practice, to know a lot about the religion takes more, I think, than just reading books that talk about it. I think being familiar with the mosque and being familiar with these practices is very helpful to a person like me who takes Islam very seriously, who speaks about the religion and writes about it. I think if I were to sit down with this imam or any imam, I would want to hear about how this practice is, again, part of the five pillars, how it relates to the very essence of Islam. I think also, though, I would want to be able to share with him maybe the very strong differences that I would bring to something like that as a Christian. Of course, I couldn't participate in one of their practices, but I certainly could observe, and I could offer kind of an analysis coming from a Christian point of view.
Ken Samples is senior research scholar for Reasons to Believe, based in Pasadena, California. He's author of the books A World of Difference, Putting Christian Truth Claims to the Worldview Test, and Without a Doubt, Answering the 20 Toughest Faith Questions. You can purchase both of these books at our website, issuesetc.org. Go to the on-demand page. Ken, thank you for your time.
Always a pleasure, Todd. Thanks.
When we come back, we're going to spend the rest of this hour, along with the church, remembering the martyrdom of John the Baptist. It's a story of intrigue, of drama, tragedy, really. And at the end of it all, John the Baptist is dead, in prison, beheaded at the whim of a little girl and the foolish promise of King Herod. His disciples come and carry away his body. What does the death of John the Baptist mean? We're going to talk about how it comes about, but we'll also spend some time with Dr. Peter Scare in the last part of this hour talking about what it means for the forerunner of Christ to suffer and to die before the Christ he proclaimed. We'll be right back.
Wouldn't it be great if more of your fellow parishioners listened to Issues Etc.? Well, here's an easy way for you to publicize Issues Etc. at your church. Go to the support page of our website, issuesetc.org, and you'll find a short paragraph to include in your weekly church bulletin. Copy and paste the text for your church secretary or pastor to include each week in the Sunday bulletin. The bulletin blurb is updated weekly, issuesetc.org. Stay connected, issuesetc.org.
We've got nothing against bumper stickers, just bumper sticker theology, and we'd like to send you an Issues Etc. bumper sticker. You'll find the Issues Etc. logo, slogan, and website address. Simply send your request to Lutheran Public Radio, Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Please include a self-addressed stamped envelope. Good theology doesn't fit on a bumper sticker, but you can tell people where to find good theology, the Issues Etc. bumper or window sticker.
Defending the faith, teaching the truth. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Would you like to share something you've heard on Issues Etc. via email, Facebook, Twitter, or text message? We've made it easy for you. Just go to the Listen On Demand page of our website, issuesetc.org, and click Share This. You'll find almost 50 ways to share Issues Etc. audio. We love our on-demand listeners. Old Theology, New Technology, issuesetc.org. Go to the Listen On Demand page and click Share This.
How does error find its way into the church? I've written an article in the latest edition of the online Issues Etc. journal titled From Exception to Rule, How Error Replaces Truth in the Church, and we'll send it to you for free. Just send your name and email address to journal@issuesetc.org. In the Wittenberg Trail feature, Jordan Cooper details his journey from Calvinism to Lutheranism. The latest Issues Etc. journal at issuesetc.org.